You are listening to the Critical Mass Radio Show, Orange County's business talk show, focused on exploring topics of interest to CEOs who are leading middle market companies, with your host, Richard Franzi.
Hello and welcome to Orange County's longest running business talk show. I am your host, Rick Franzi, and I believe we're going to have a great show for you today. Why do you ask? Because Lisa Anderson is our guest. She's a returning guest. She's been on the program before. We invited her back to give us an update. Her firm is LMA Consulting Group. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So let's kick it off with your origin story. Take us back in time. Tell us what you saw in the marketplace, or what was the inspiration and motivation to start LMA Consulting Group?
Well, I've always had a passion for manufacturing. I've worked in manufacturing since I started my career. And when I wrapped up my last official job, I thought, well, what could I do where I could have flexibility, variety, and be able to provide real value? I thought, well, I'm going to help manufacturers improve their processes in the U.S. Wouldn't that be great instead of outsourcing everything? Mm-hmm. So that's what I've been doing.
So let's talk about pivots or changes to the model. What have you learned since you launched LMA Consulting? How has the business changed? And maybe how has the needs of the client base changed over time?
Well, it's, you know, I've learned, I went into it with my eyes open. So at least that part was good. It really is true what they say. And that is that you have to have a full business thinking background to run a company successfully. It's not simply good enough to be able to help clients solve problems. It really is just not, because you won't have any clients to help them solve problems. So I think that, you know, what I've learned is that you have to be constantly, visible and, you know, getting your name out there so that clients are aware of who you are. So as they want to improve their business, as they want to grow their business in a profitable way, they know how to find you. And so that's really the trick. And you have to stay up to speed on what's happening and what's trending in your field. And so my case, manufacturing and supply chain. So there's a ton going on in that field.
So I think the recent experience with COVID, people learn supply chain, the term supply chain, and it's sort of part in our zeitgeist now. And, you know, because
it's true, it's become popular.
Yeah, it's like a buzzword now. You're like, cool, you're cool. Your stuff is really, so let's talk about what you specifically do. So who do you help? Go a little deeper on who do you help, what problems are you solving, and why are they picking to work with you other than you're wonderful?
Well, so I really work with manufacturers. So 80% are manufacturers and also value add distributors. So basically, I see a manufacturer as doing all the distribution as well as producing parts. And let's see, what did you say?
What problems do you solve?
So that's who I work with. And what I do with them is I focus on supply chain management. That's, of course, a broad term. So really, it's all about how do you figure out how to get the right products to the right place at the right time, at the right profit. And how do you make all that happen is really the crux of what I do for manufacturers, which means bringing in the materials to producing in the most effective order and the way of scheduling production so that you can have the best service to customers to grow the business while being most efficient operationally and also having the least amount of inventory tied up unnecessarily throughout your organization. And then doing that in a way that's most efficient from a transportation logistics and systems infrastructure.
So it seems to me, this is a layperson's opinion, although I ran a manufacturing company for a number of years, so I think I have a little bit of knowledge in this area, that the assumption of how vulnerable your supply chain was was not what it appeared once they realized what happened with COVID. And for that reason, people were willing to have lower amounts of inventory because the supply chain looked pretty bulletproof. Yeah. Has people's sensibilities about the risk and now inherent maybe in the supply chain vulnerability changed their willingness to have money on the shelf, if you will, a little more inventory? Or?
Well, for sure, it's changed things. You know, we don't have the longest memories. I wish that people did. But right. Generally speaking, it has definitely changed things. Because pre-pandemic, I really believe that companies became too, like, they went through, if you were a larger company, generally speaking, they went through the motions. They did the, like, risk assessments, made sure that they had, you know, a robust supply chain. But did that hold up during COVID? Generally, no. And like the smaller companies probably didn't even go through all those fields. Now, post-COVID, they certainly learned that supply chain was much more vulnerable than they thought, because now that we're global, even if their suppliers are next door, which they typically aren't anymore, but even if they are, that supplier is dependent on multiple other suppliers that are probably located around the world and go through all sorts of different challenges along their way to just receiving the raw materials. And then you have, you know, all sorts of challenges on your way from there to the customer. So they realize that there's vulnerable, and then they went from just-in-time inventory. Mm-hmm. And just-in-time was misinterpreted. So many clients interpreted it as literally receiving inventory just in time. And that is not what the product, that's not what's meant. You know, the Japanese term here, or, you know, theory of just in time is really much meant to be more logical. So if you have a critical item, you should be stocking something, you know, there's more to it. But they took it literally. They pretty much brought in items just in time. Then they ran out, of course. And then they went to just in case, because they panicked in the other direction. So they said, well, we're going to bring in excess inventory. Well, so now I have several clients that's like, wow, I have way too much inventory. We need to reduce inventory. So we don't need to go from one extreme to the other. What's really best is to have the right inventory. So it means that you have to have more inventory on items where you have, like, if you only have one supplier, by all means, you're dependent on them. That's a problem. But or if you have suppliers that are in, you know, geopolitical risk zones, there's like some common sense that should apply here, but it's uncommon common sense, generally speaking. But companies have gone from just in time to what I'm calling just in case. And now they're like, it depends. If they're proactive, they're thinking about right-sizing their inventory. And some clients or potential clients are a bit panicking in the other direction, because now that interest rates have gone up, you know, they're thinking, wow, this is really costly. I need to get rid of inventory. But I would just recommend to all your listeners that it's best not to panic and go from one extreme to the other. We need to be logical and do some common sense inventory planning.
In their defense, I don't know what planning session sat down and said, okay, what if there's a global pandemic that shuts down the world all at the same time? Do we have a contingency plan for that? I mean, it was such a unheard of. 100 years.
There is nobody that really, I mean, there were some clients that performed better than others, but it was really more about how much were they dependent on, you know, the world, if you will, instead of having more of a regional supply chain. So to your point, though, no one can plan for that. That is the extreme. Right. All I'm saying is that we shouldn't plan for, well, one would hope that these kinds of extremes aren't going to happen in the future, but there will be disruptions. So we need to be thinking, you know,
there's always geopolitical risk to your supply chain if your supply chain is geopolitically located around the world, because you never know what's going to happen. We have issues in the Mediterranean, right? I mean, there's,
yeah.
All business is challenging. I don't know one business that's like set it and forget it, right? It's everything's changing. But in my world, because I see a lot of different types of businesses and what I do, when you're a manufacturing company, you have as many challenges as anybody else. I don't know of another business model that has more complexity to it
it's true. Manufacturer. You're absolutely right. And that might be why I enjoy manufacturing. And I think it's good if we can, if the U.S. as an example can produce complex products profitably, and we can better support customers, and we can support jobs and utilize the latest technologies. Like that's exciting, because we can, you know, really provide more value to our, you know, to the economy as well, et cetera. So, yeah.
And when you look at the inputs of cost for a manufacturer, labor is certainly one of the input costs. But relatively speaking, you know, over time, it's becoming less and less of a component of that cost.
That is for sure true. And I'll tell you that, like, when I was the vice president of operations and supply chain for a mid-market manufacturer, and this was obviously, well, it was pre-COVID, because I've been consulting now for about 18 years. But I would get constant questions from the board of directors about, you know, labor costs. What are you going to do to reduce labor costs? And labor costs was not the biggest cost component. So, you know, to your point, everyone's so focused on labor costs. And even then, for the type of product that I was working with, material costs was number one, transportation costs was number two, labor costs was, like, you know, down there on the list. But did they ask me about anything except for labor costs? No. So it is quite the conundrum, but it really has gone down a lot, because as we've been utilizing automation, you know, there's all sorts of robotics, you know, there's all sorts of, like, technologies available today. You're really been reducing the percent of labor cost in a product. And really the costs of producing in China, as an example, have gone up pretty dramatically in terms of labor costs. And if you don't even have a high labor cost product, you're not, I mean, there, it doesn't even make sense to move it to Mexico.
Right. Well,
makes sense to bring it back.
If I remember correctly, in our pre-meeting, you were mentioning that the labor rates in Mexico are competitive now with the labor rates in China.
The labor rates in Mexico, generally speaking, are actually better than China now. So you're right. I mean, it certainly makes sense. If you have a high labor content product, you aren't going to probably bring that back to the U.S. unless, like, it's got some kind of a it's commodity and it's high labor costs, you're going to move it to Mexico. But if it's not a commodity product and it doesn't have a high labor content, I would evaluate really where you should be bringing that, because it could very well be that you should bring it closer to your customer in a way that you can have more engineering talent, and, you know, you can, like, make sure that you can keep your competitive edge strong. So that could really be to the U.S.
Yeah, that transfer from engineering and development to manufacturing is such a critical aspect of in manufacturing, because it in the lab, it's one thing, but at scale, and to have that manufacturing facility too far away from where those industrial engineers, design engineers are, that's a hidden cost in a business. In my opinion, it's a risk, frankly.
So it's definitely, it's all of the above. I mean, it's a risk, because I mean, the good news is we do have agreements with Mexico, so you have more stability, but, you know, there are still borders, there are still problems, there are still, like, you know,
language
issues and language, drugs, all, you know, as far as, like, cartels, all sorts of problems going on. So, you know, there's no reason to add more risk to your supply chain than is needed to ensure you do the three things that we talked about earlier. And that is, how do you support your business growth in a way that's profitable, scalable, and you make sure you have all the resources you need, because water and electricity aren't necessarily, like, easy.
Right.
They're not always available.
Right.
And that you can do it in a way where you can have the least amount of inventory, which, if you produce it in the local area, closest to customers, if you use 3D printing and additive manufacturing, it could, you know, there could be a really good case for moving it back to the U.S. But to your point, Mexico is a really good, viable alternative, especially for high labor content products.
So when you use the term scalable, I think most people would think scaling up. But the truth is, in a manufacturer, you also have to be able to scale down.
You do. Yeah. You want to be, these days, it's so volatile. You want to be able to be resilient. So you want to be able to scale up and scale down. And actually, I have clients that produce in the US. I mean, some of them produce like throughout the world, actually. But the, like, let's just say the US location, and they, their volumes have changed pretty dramatically between COVID, now post-COVID. Now it's been like lagging because of the interest rates and people are very unsure, the elections, et cetera. It's caused orders to get pushed out. And to some degree, you would be scaling down, right? Mm-hmm. But if you have the ability to, like some of them have offload, meaning that they had suppliers nearby that supplemented their volume, and they can bring those products back in-house so that they can still meet their customer needs. They're actually more profitable because they don't have to give away some of the margin, and they're able to flex down overall, but in their facility, they kept it the same, if that makes sense. And they could do the same things with temporary employees, et cetera. So you really do need to be agile in today's world.
And that is just the tip of the iceberg, ladies and gentlemen, for what manufacturers have to deal with on a regular basis, because you're really predicting the future in a very uncertain time. And then you have to set up your supply chain to allow you to be at the point when the customer wants to buy it in the right quantities. Oh my goodness, be a That's service right. industry.
It's true. It is not for the faint of heart, right? No. There's a lot, and you have to have checkpoints in place and, you know, be proactively on top of all of this all the time so that you can, like, the worst thing you want is to have growth opportunities and not be able to scale up fast enough. On the other hand, keeping all those resources around will make you unprofitable and could send you out of business. So you have to be flexible, to your point.
And so we haven't even talked about quality, right? So we're just talking about getting the material, but there's this other level of getting the material that meets your quality specifications, which can be very challenging.
Right. And for example, Boeing has run into issues, right? Which has created havoc through that supply chain. I was actually just talking on Bloomberg yesterday about that topic. Really? So it's quality is not something to be laughed at. And it's, I mean, you have to build quality into your process with the, you know, this transformation of resources, like with the baby boomer retirements and, you know, people changing careers too with COVID, it's created some challenges, and it's not as simple as it used to be, basically. So we have to figure out ways to like stay on top of our quality. Cause as that's proven, you can't have parts of the airplane falling off in the sky, obviously.
You know, I think in this country, we have just begun to take quality for granted. The automotive industry has done a fantastic job of building quality products. I mean, since the 70s to now, if you compare the reliability and the parts and the rest. So I think we just assume electronics, everything's going to work. But to see such a large manufacturer as Boeing having such public issues with quality and their supply chain and their maintenance crews, it is really a lesson in how challenging, and that's a big manufacturing project, right?
It is. And actually, like, everyone's like, well, you know, I'll just move to Airbus. But actually, Airbus has been having problems too from one of their suppliers. And so, you know, there are quality issues. You know, it's just not aerospace. Obviously, it's widespread, and it kind of relates back to people, technologies, processes. How do you bring all that together in a way that's successful? Like you said, it's not for the faint of heart.
We used to have three manufacturers of commercial aircraft in this country: Lockheed Martin, General McDonnell Douglas, and Boeing. And now we have Boeing. I mean, so it's not like the marketplace, like the airline industry, can go, you know what, we're going to start buying somebody else's planes for a while because we just can't trust you, Boeing. There really are two suppliers.
Yeah, and that is a risk, to your point, because really that you don't want to be single sourced ever. I mean, certainly not with a critical material. And that, you know, COVID proved that too, because if you don't have a backup, how about a backup to your backup? I mean, that's coming up right now too, because we have crazy things going on in the supply chain between the drought affecting the Panama Canal, Houthi rebels attacking ships in the Suez Canal and the Baltimore Bridge collapse. I mean, all of that, like, we're backups to the backup, having more problems at the backup.
Right. And here in California, we have a very robust port network, but we also have a lot of challenging air quality requirements, which are really impacting the efficiencies of the ports and the future of how do you get the material off the container into onto a truck out. I mean, it's ladies and gentlemen.
You know, there's the regulations that California has put into place to come online. The technology doesn't even exist to meet the regulations. So that's obviously. Something's got to give somewhere along the line. But to your point, that's it's a catch 22. We have, you know, we're all making really good progress on many fronts, but there's a lot to navigate.
So what's the future hold for you and LMA Consulting Group?
Well, I think there's a lot of opportunity.
As we just said.
Manufacturing and supply chain, right? So it's interesting, actually. You know, the vast majority of our clients are manufacturers, but I'm also seen as a logistics or a supply chain expert. And it's really because in today's world, you have to be an expert in the end-to-end supply chain, meaning from, like, you know, cradle to grave, or however you want to put that, from the beginning of a life cycle of, you know, taking something from the ground or making a product through, how do you get it to the end customer? And then even how do you recycle from there? You have to have some knowledge of the entire chain to figure out how to do this in a successful way. So yeah, I think there's vast opportunities, like I was saying, for regional manufacturing, reshoring, nearshoring, all of the above. And I think that's great for the U.S. economy. It's great for jobs. It's great for customers, because customers will get products. They can, I mean, who knows what they need 13 weeks in advance? Nobody. And they change their minds. And this is not just consumers, but businesses as well. So the more flexible we can be and the closer the manufacturing is to the consumer, the more successful it'll be. So I think there'll be vast opportunities. And really, one of the key topics that I focus on is what's called sales and operations planning, or sales inventory operations planning. And what does that really mean? It's how do you solve the supply chain misalignment, meaning like the demand is in one place, but the supply is in another, or we don't have enough materials to meet the manufacturing schedule, or the manufacturing schedule is not producing the right things to meet the customer deliveries or at the right quality levels, etc. So how do we fix that misalignment and not just fix it, but make it more successful and sustainable so that you can, be profitable and gather opportunities. So I think that topic area is going to be, has a bright future. So it's exciting, and you can stay on the leading edge of what's going on from a process, systems, and an industry point of view.
Yeah, because in manufacturing, you can be tempted to fix a problem by putting more cost into it.
Right.
Overnighting, overtime, the subtle things that you can meet the demand, but you go, wow.
Yep. And from time to time, you do have to do that, but you have to have like a plan in place so that it's not a long term.
Yeah, fix. It doesn't become the
for
new.
Sure, overnighting something instead of shipping it by like rail is extremely costly, and it's like less sustainable. Because I was just on talking to someone else about being green and less carbon footprints. So you want to like consider everything, though. You don't want to just consider any one variable, which is what makes, actually, that's part of what I really like about manufacturing is that it's not a simple black and white equation. There is never a right and wrong answer. You have to look at like 10 variables, and it could be more, but let's just say 10 variables, and you're never going to have the perfect answer. You're going to have what's the best optimized equation given the current situation, and what do I do if point A happens, or what if point B happens? So you have to be thinking about a lot of things at one time, which I think is exciting, but it also could be, to your point, lead some folks to say, you know what, go to Starbucks, I think.
I'm going to be a barista because that's a manufacturing process, but it's a very controllable one. That's interesting. I've totally enjoyed this time with you. You're just such a wealth of knowledge and so much fun. That's why I consider you a friend as well as an acquaintance here on the program. I do believe putting a manufacturing plant inside of a community is really a good thing for the community. The stuff that comes up around it is really builds a really good community. So I'm glad to hear you use the terms reshoring and
new. I agree with you, Rick. And you know, it's interesting because I'm at a client at the moment, and it's actually at a plant that's really kind of in the middle of nowhere. But it's got such a great community, and it's really much more like a family, right, even though it's a large plant. And it's definitely a driver to the economy of the region.
Right. So I'm very excited. I mean, you know, maybe it's a silver lining of COVID, you know, if there is such a thing. But one of them might be that some of these kind of jobs that we rush to get offshore find their way back onto shore and set up, you know, that kind of supply chain, which I think would be
absolutely. And you know what? It's not just what is seen as dirty jobs at all anymore. Right. I mean, there is so much like technology and, you know, software and like advanced like AI and other things that you use in manufacturing today that it's, you know, it's really transformed the ability for to be an exciting career for folks.
Yeah, there's been a lot of investment in smart machining and intelligent communications and a connected plant and factory. I mean, you're right. I mean, it's a science project now more than anything else, not a standalone machine. So, absolutely. So if someone wants to reach out to you, Lisa Anderson, and how could they not? How do they find you?
Well, they can. There's two ways with my website. Well, there's many, but LMA-consultinggroup.com. All one word .com is the website. And there's lots of information there. Feel free to sign up for any of my free newsletters and other updates. And then also on LinkedIn for sure. LinkedIn, Twitter, etc. But on LinkedIn, it's Lisa Anderson, LMA is my personal profile. And of course you can find LMA Consulting Group as well on Twitter. So, well, on LinkedIn, but also on Twitter. So any of the above.
Well, the time has flown, and I want to say thank you again for your persistence and being a returning guest on the show. I knew we'd have fun, and you did not disappoint.
Excellent. Well, I enjoyed it as well. Thank you.
And thank the audience. You've been a part of Orange County's longest-running business talk show. Lisa's show now joins our catalog of over 1,400 episodes. If you're an Orange County entrepreneur or a leader of a nonprofit, and you'd like to share your story with our audience, then reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm Rick, R-I-C, Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I. Coincidentally, that's our company's website, rickfranzi.com. And Haley, our producer, or myself, will be happy to talk with you about being a guest on a future episode. Until we are all back together, I hope all of your business decisions will move your company in a positive direction.